Oh, okay, it'll eventually come up. Who is from the University of Southern California.
Thank you, Jude. So our charge really was to sort of think a little bit about what's been happening in the field over the past 10 years and attempt to summarize what we think the significant achievements are, accomplishments, milestones, and that sort of thing. And for me, I identified really three areas that I think significant progress and advance has been made. And the first is realizing the limited effectiveness of mass media and other communication campaigns and programs. And you'll see that I think that there's real value in understanding that these are not panaceas and they're not going to cure everything, but instead understanding how well health communication programs work and what their limitations are so that we're not promising the world and being disappointed. The second area is there seems to be widespread acceptance of the importance of program evaluation within the context of doing communication interventions. And I think that's critically important because we now, really everybody across the board, it seems just about, will say, yes, if we're going to do this program, we need an evaluation and need to know how it works. And then the third thing of particular interest to me has been the advent of social network analysis and understanding and appreciating and learning more about the role of interpersonal communication and social networks in media campaigns. And I'm going to dive down a little bit into each one of these topics. So the first being the sort of limited effectiveness of communication campaigns. And for me, one of the most significant publications in the past 10 years has been the work of Leslie Snyder doing meta-analysis of media campaigns and communication interventions and showing that that range of effectiveness is somewhere between 3% and up to 7%, maybe even 9%. She identified some factors that vary that limited effectiveness. But the critical point being that when you start thinking about if you're going to do a campaign, how many people's behavior are you going to change? And understanding that it could possibly be 5%, and that could be a really, really great thing. 5% is a huge effect for a program. And once you know that that's the number, you can start to plan your evaluation around that. You can start to plan your campaign and your other activities around that number. The second thing, of course, is the more widespread use of the hierarchy of effects model. McGuire sort of developed that quite extensively in the late 1980s, really related to the diffusion of innovations model, the stages of change model, and so on. And really, all of those stages of change models do point out that if you're going to go through a stage process, ultimately you're only going to have behavior change among a fairly small percent of the population. And then sort of related to that is this, a lot of evidence that when we do programs, something happens, some change happens. We're a lot of times not exactly sure what to attribute it to, but we do see some change. And so I think there's fair agreement that we do have limited effectiveness of our programs, but there is an effect there. And some time ago, I sort of developed this hypothetical model here where you have a trade-off between the intervention and the reach of the program. And typically, mass media programs thought to reach a lot of the audience, change a little bit of behavior. Other more interpersonal interventions, one-on-one counseling, community mobilization, and outreach may reach fewer people but have a larger effect. And I think that this sort of builds into the notion of how our programs work, and it'd be nice to fill this slide out with some empirical data at some point in time. And then this notion that we need to do evaluation research, and a lot of people sort of appreciating that evaluation is a critical component of what an intervention is going to be, and that you can't do an intervention without evaluating whether it works or not, and the whole data collection process being an integral part to how a program is designed and implemented. And I think program planners have increasingly recognized that evaluation is important to their programs rather than waiting until the program finishes. And I think that that's created a sort of more inclusive model of allowing evaluators to be a part of the team that helps identify and design the program. When the evaluation field started to get off the ground in the 60s and 70s, there was much more of an emphasis that evaluators were external to the program and their job was to be objective and just, you know, give you a red or a green flag, did it work or not. And now I think there's much more of an appreciation that evaluation is part of the implementation, development, and planning process. One thing that intersects with all this stuff, of course, is the development and advent of new technologies. Advances in communication technologies have changed our programming. We look at that trade-off space, and we always have this distinction between mass media versus interpersonal channels for behavior change. And with new emerging communication technologies, probably not even emerging anymore, the distinction between what is a mass medium and what is an interpersonal one gets blurred a little bit, and as we increasingly use the internet and new social networking sites and other kinds of technologies for interventions, exactly how they're going to come down on that continuum, I'm not really sure. And I think, too, that there's been a pretty dramatic change in the way younger people are using technology. It's a much more active medium. The phone's no longer just a phone. It's a text messaging system. It's a video camera. It's everything, and increasingly relied on for lots of different things. Okay, and then the third area where I think there's been a sort of significant change, although there's still a lot of work to do, is the notion that social networks are important influences on behavior and may be important avenues for intervention. So relations are important, everybody's connected. The advent of communication technologies has made more explicit the existence of social networks and the fact that people spend a lot of time communicating with others in their social network, and it's become a real critical part of people's lives. And related to that has been a widespread change in statistical modeling and analysis, where we really recognize that people are clustered, that we're no longer looking at random independently selected samples, but instead we typically have clustered samples, and our statistical analysis designs, the advent of random effects models and hierarchical linear modeling, have all really quite explicitly acknowledged this notion that people are clustered. They're not independent, and they're not cut off from their community or their social context. And the technology and techniques for doing social network analysis have become much more widespread. We can do community-based studies of social networks, look at who's connected to whom. We can segment our audience based on where they are in the network. We can target particular individuals in the network. We can look for naturally occurring opinion leaders. We can find bridges, naturally occurring groups, and all of that stuff. And that gives us a whole new set of tools in our armamentarium for doing intervention. So not only will it be a significant influence on behavior and understanding its moderating or mediating role in program effectiveness, but it also becomes an explicit avenue for creating more effective interventions. And I have examples of that for anybody that's interested in them. And related to this notion of new technology is the idea that the social network field has developed tools for analyzing very large networks. And you can look at very large networks and sort of start to uncover their structure and learn a lot about how messages and ideas are diffused through that network. So I think the other thing is that when we do our programs and our interventions, there is a lot of collaboration and coordination that needs to occur between all the various implementing agencies. And so there is an intersection between understanding how programs are implemented and the social networks and interorganizational networks that exist to make those programs work. And increasingly, our interventions are often fairly large endeavors which involve multiple stakeholders and multiple groups, all of which have to be included and brought into the process as we unfold those programs. And network analysis provides a means for understanding how that works and whether or not our programs are effectively being designed and implemented via the interorganizational and collaboration networks that exist in that process. That's more confusing than it needed to be, I think, but maybe I need to work on that slide. So what do things look like going forward? And from my experience, sociology and demography were fields that in the 80s and 90s were very quite intimately involved with the public health enterprise. I cut my teeth evaluating communication programs to promote family planning and reproductive health in developing countries, and we had a lot of sociologists and demography people involved in those endeavors. It seems now, from my viewpoint, that health communication has become a fairly integral part of the public health enterprise. Back in the 90s, there were very few programs in health communication communication in schools of public health. There were virtually no faculty in schools of public health that were trained in communication, and now there are quite explicit calls for faculty and individuals with that health communication training to get involved in the public health field. That's become an asset, surprisingly enough. I do think, though, that, and I hate to say this, but I do think that we're still somewhat theoretically deficient in what we're doing. We're still using old, great behavior change models, and I want us to continue using those models. But I still think that we haven't figured out exactly how they work. And it's in their application, of course, that we learn more about how these theoretical behavior change models do work. And I still think that we're learning a lot theoretically about how behavior change happens and what it happens. And I think part of that's because the media landscape changes more quickly than we can adapt to it. There's stuff going on, you know, it's a moving train and we're jumping on it, trying to create interventions to change people's health behaviors, and we're competing with a lot of other organizations that may adapt to those technologies more quickly. And I think, just sort of in conclusion, people are still people, and to understand how to change behavior, we need to learn more about what goes on for people. Okay, I've stayed on time, and I don't know. Then I push that button again, and I go to the next presentation.